audio.
Yeah, it's just audio.
Really impressive.
I mean, I'm looking for acceptance on this.
No, I'm freaking out. We all come out. Like a whole three schools.
That's what the problem is.
Questions about anything from last time? Questions? Well, I'm going to continue now. I mentioned at the last Friday that there's a way to write a Fourier series involving the complex exponential, and I want to demonstrate that here. Let's see if I can. So here's the key. You might have learned back somewhere that the exponential function has a power series expansion. 0 to infinity, x to the n over n factorial. And when you put in, Euler realized when you put I theta, put a complex number where the x is, you can make sense of the convergence of this series. And so the famous Euler's identity is you replace x, the I times theta. And then when you plug that in there, you would get, let's see what happens. Use the fact that I squared is minus 1. So let's see, we would get, the first term is just 1. But then the next term would be I theta over 1 factorial. And the next one would be I squared theta squared over 2 factorial. And now I squared is minus 1. And the next one would be I cubed theta cubed over 3 factorial. So let's see, I squared is minus 1. And so I cubed would be I times that, that's minus I. And when you play around and do what Euler must have done, you can split this into real and imaginary parts. And the real part, let's see, there's 1 minus theta squared over 2 factorial. The next one, which would be purely real, would be the I to the fourth one. And let's see, that would be I squared times I squared, that's minus 1 times minus 1, that's plus 1. So, and you keep doing that until you start seeing what the pattern, so that'd be 4 factorial. The next one is going to be a minus theta to the 6th over 6 factorial, etc. That's the famous power series for cosine. And then you collect all the terms that would have I. And because, you know, I cubed is minus I, so you never get more than I to the 1 power when you figure out what those things are. And so the ones that have I, the first one does. The next one would be minus theta cubed over 3 factorial. That's the one I have right here. And then you can figure the pattern by doing a couple more. The next one would be theta to the 5th over 5 factorial, etc. Dot, dot, dot. And those are the famous power series for cosine theta and sine theta. I'm teaching Math 530, which is the graduate course in doing calculus with complex analysis at 10:30 on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And so you can start doing power series with complex numbers and make a whole science out of it. It's like going back and doing freshman calculus, but with complex numbers. And this all makes really good sense when you stick in any old complex number in place of the x there. Put in a z. And then you get a thing called the complex exponential. Anyway, I'm going to take this to be the definition of e to the I theta. Let's see. I wrote I x. I meant to put a theta I times theta here. The complex exponential is e to the x plus iy, and that would be e to the, it's true that the complex exponential satisfies the same rules that the real one does. So e to the alpha plus beta is e to the alpha times e to the beta. even when those things are complex numbers. And now using that identity, Euler's identity I have above, this would be e to the x cosine y plus I to the e to the x sine y. For us, that's just a definition of the complex exponential. But it's a very convenient thing and has lots of connections to all kinds of fancy math. And eventually, if you're going to study much math, you have to go in the complex domain to understand real things, especially like things like Fourier series and inverse Laplace transform and things like that. You've got to let the variables go complex to really understand what's going on. Well, questions about that? So for us, this is just going to be a definition of that symbol. But with that definition, it becomes easy to write the Fourier coefficients. So let's see. If I have e to the I theta is cosine theta plus I sine theta, and therefore e to the minus I theta, that would be cosine minus theta plus I sine minus theta. And cosine minus theta is the same as cosine theta. But sine of minus theta is minus I sine theta. And so when Euler was playing around with these things way back, he realized, aha, if I add these two together, the sine terms are going to cancel. And I'm going to be left with 2 cosine theta is equal to something involving complex exponentials. And so Euler played around and was the first one to write down, let's see, if I add those two, I get 2 cosine theta equals at least some of these two things. And therefore cosine theta would be e to the I theta minus e to the minus I theta, plus over 2. And now if I subtract these things, then the cosine terms cancel, and I'd get I sine theta minus and minus would be plus. So I'd get 2i. When I subtract them, I'd get 2i sine theta equals something. And when you play that game, you get that sine of theta is e to the I theta minus e to the minus I theta over 2i. Those are the famous formulas. And it turns out that writing Fourier series in terms of these things is a very convenient thing to do. So remember in the very beginning I wrote out I want to expand something in terms of trigonometric functions, cosine and sine. And so now I'm going to write cosine nx as e to the I nx plus e to the minus I nx over 2. And play games. Okay, so I guess I have to write that thing again. So I'm going to have f of x is a naught plus sum from 1 to infinity a n. Cosine nx is going to be e to the I nx plus e to the minus I nx over 2. And the sine one is going to be bn e to the I nx minus e to the minus I nx over 2i. Close parentheses. And now you play around with this, and you get, let's see, what do you get? You're going to get a naught times e to the zero, I times zero. So there's actually an e to the I, there's going to be an e to the I nx here where n is zero. But let's think about the other ones. Let me pull out, I'm going to pull out all the junk that I get times e to the I nx, and then I'm going to pull out all the junk I get times e to the minus I nx.
All right, let's see, I get an times e to the inx over 2, and then I get a bn times e to the inx over 2i.
And 1 over I is minus I. So I claim I get 1 half times an minus ibn. That's because 1 over I is minus I.
And then the other one's the e to the minus inx. I'm going to get a 1 half an right there. And then I'm going to get a minus 1 over I. That's going to be a plus I.
So I claim when you do the... Here you would get 1 half an plus ibn. And here's a cool thing.
It turns out that when you write it like this, these coefficients...
I'm going to write it like this now. This is going to be a sum of cn e to the inx as n goes from minus infinity to infinity.
And remember, we had those formulas for the ans.
Okay, so the because here. Remember, an was 1 over pi, integral from minus pi to pi, of f of x. F of x cosine nx. dx.
I'm saying because...
Oh, I didn't tell you what the cn's are. The cn's are going to be... one over 2 pi integral from minus pi to pi f of x times e to the e to the minus inx dx. Sorry. Let me clean this up. F of x times e to the minus inx dx. And so the because is that I've got these things where the coefficients
and when I stick these formulas up there and have the an minus bn, then I would have, and look at that, I've got a 1 half and an I. I'd get 1 half this cosine minus I times sine. And that's exactly the exponential thing. So if I stick those in there, let's see.
So the y, I would see that the cn, when n is positive,
is 1 half an minus ibn.
Anyway, I think I'm getting bogged down on this. It's just a matter of writing it out and writing the definitions of the complex exponential.
And so when you plug that all in, you say, aha, yes, it's true. And that's a much easier thing to write down than all the stuff involving different coefficients when it's cosine and when it's sine.
So later on, that's going to streamline our writing by a lot. I want to tell you what the facts are before we start getting into the details about demonstrating them. By the way, this formula even works for the C0 term. So it makes it much more convenient to write down. By the way, there's a word that I've been holding myself back from saying. A trigonometric polynomial. Refers to, a trigonometric polynomial of degree n would be anything that looks like the beginning of a Fourier series. So let's call it P sub n of x It'd have a constant term plus a sum. As n goes from 1 to capital N, a n cosine nx plus b n sine nx.
So it's, these ans don't have to be the Fourier coefficients. They could be any old thing. And so there are general functions of this form. That's called a trigonometric polynomial of degree n.
And if you play the game I just did, you can always write that as a sum as n goes from minus capital N to plus capital N of some coefficients times e to the inx.
And here's the reason they're called trigonometric polynomials.
These things satisfy the same rules of as you would expect polynomials to. These would be... So why polynomial? Maybe it's still kind of not a great answer, but why polynomial? Here's a reason. E to the inx, there's something called the de Moivre formulas, is e to the ix to the n.
So it really does, it looks like a polynomial in e to the ix. And e to the ix are the trig functions. So I think that's why they call them trigonometric polynomials. But it's just a word. And we're going to study Fourier series are special trigonometric polynomials with special properties. And we're going to study them. But we're going to study general facts about trigonometric polynomials. For example, they're dense in the space of continuous functions. That's a fantastic result and very useful. Okay, so before I get into some of the details and the proofs of things, I want to tell you the facts that we're going for. So here's the big fact. Fourier series converge to the function. To the function they're supposed to. Swiftly, where f is smooth. So if it's nice and differentiable, and in fact continuously differentiable, and the more differentiable it is, the more swiftly that converges. So it converges to f swiftly at places where f, I'll say on intervals. Where f is smooth, and converges to f even at the kinks. So if there's a kinky corner, even at corners. But slowly. So yeah, we noticed that in the when I was messing around with Maple doing numerical calculations. I got convergence at the kink in the harpsichord string, but the convergence was much slower there. It eventually pushed it out to a corner, but it never got all the way there. Not nearly as fast as the flat parts. So, but slowly, or more slowly. And another mind-blowing fact is that if there's a jump, the Fourier series converges to the midpoint of the jump. And we're going to demonstrate these things as the course goes along. So, there's one more thing to think about in this fact. I think I'll demonstrate it by a picture. And two, I'll leave a blank right here, at the endpoints. So here's a blank, saving that spot.
Here's, so remember Fourier series are 2π periodic. And so the picture would be something like this. Let's have, I want minus pi to plus pi. Let me have a function that looks like this. So it'll start here, and it'll go down and come back like that.
There's my function.
So notice on the left, it looks like it ought to be this. And on this spot, it looks like it ought to be that.
But all those functions in the Fourier series are 2π periodic. So this thing, the Fourier series, would pick this up and repeat it.
So this one over here, maybe I should have made this one a different color, green. This would get picked up over here, and then it would repeat. And this one gets picked up and moved to the left, it repeats like this.
And then when you look at it like that, you say, aha, this is not it. This is actually a jump. And the jump goes from the red dot to the green dot. So, and the fact is it converges to the midpoint of that jump.
So if this is, the green thing is A, and the red thing is B, B, so this would be a B right here, and an A up here. The midpoint of those two things is A plus B over 2. And so the to fill in the blank, it's the midpoint of that jump.
At the endpoints. And if your Fourier series connects together nice here, then the midpoint of the jump wouldn't be a jump. So if your thing is a nice smooth function, for example, the harpsichord string, it repeated and didn't have any jumps
when you extend it as a periodic function.
So they don't have to be jumps at the endpoints, but the picture shows you that if this is your F, and sure enough, you've got a jump there.
Okay, that's the fact. Let's see, there's a famous Fourier series, a fun example. The ramp function. Which is just the function x. After you do the constant function I did last time,
I did the function 1 last time and got Fourier series for it. Then the next function to do would be y equals x.
And you'd use partial, what you use
is integration by parts to compute the Fourier coefficients. And it converges incredibly fast to this function on the smooth parts. But at the endpoints, you have to figure that there's actually jumps in the background.
The big picture would be a sawtooth thing like this. And here, it would be zero at all these things because that's the midpoint of the jumps. So this would be minus pi, pi, 2π, etc. Because of the jumps. And the Fourier series, if I didn't fire up Maple today, the Fourier series is kind of a beautiful thing to look at. What does it look like? It wiggles really close. And then there's like a Gibbs phenomenon. It overshoots this spot, comes down, overshoots this spot, and then wiggles really close. Overshoots, undershoots, and then wiggles really close. It's a beautiful picture. If you get comfortable messing around with Maple, you ought to give it a try. It's fun to compute the coefficients in Maple.
And then it's fun to get a graph of it.
But in fact, I should have made this go through that red dot. Make this red dot bigger. They actually all go,
you can calculate it, and they're actually equal to zero here. So sure enough, that's the midpoint thing. And in fact, understanding the midpoint jump for that function I graphed last time that had the jump from plus one to minus one, once you understand that jump, you understand all jumps. Because you can subtract that to make jumps go away. And if you understand that jump, you'll understand these jumps. And we'll do that at some point.
Okay. I guess it's a good time to talk about even and odd functions, because they come up when you're dealing with Fourier series. Because cosine functions are all even, and sine functions are all odd. So I'm expanding a function in terms of even functions plus odd functions. And there's a classic way of thinking about that. So even and odd functions and Fourier series. Stein does this in the first chapter. So let's see, an even function simply means that f of x, f of minus x is equal to f of x. So the picture would be, let's make a function here. If it's this over here,
and a function is even, would
mean you can reflect it about the y-axis. And so, for example, if this is, here's minus x, it would mean that this distance here, if I was calculating an integral, for example,
these values would be equal. F of x minus x is equal to f of x. These rectangles would have the same area. So it means that the area, the integrals that would involve functions to the right, are the same as the integrals that would involve functions to the left.
Okay, so that's the picture. And so from the point of view of integrals, it also means that, let's see, the integral on the left-hand side, so minus L to 0 of f of x dx, would be the same as the integral from 0 to L of f of x dx.
Simply because each of those little rectangles would line up with one on the other side, and the same base and the same height. You can also do a change of variables to figure that out. I could take this integral and change the variable to minus t, and mess around it with it and see that this is a true formula.
But I don't want to do it formally, I just want to draw the picture. But a change of variables would do the same thing. Okay, so that's a fact. Those areas are equal. Another nice fact to know is that the integral, the symmetric integral for minus L to L, that would be 2 times the integral from 0 to L. Okay, so that's a fact for even functions. The corresponding fact for odd functions are such that minus f of x equal, f of minus x is f is minus f of x. And so the picture for these things, let's say the same old function, I have this thing that looks like that. Then if it's odd, then on this side over here, it would look like a reflected thing like that. And the deal would be, here's minus x. This little distance has to be minus this distance.
It means this rectangle would be minus the area of this rectangle.
And so a fact about odd functions would be that an integral from minus L to 0 of f of x dx would be equal to minus the integral from 0 to L of f of x dx. And therefore, if I were to integrate from minus L to L, those two would cancel, and I'd get a big fat zero.
Make sure you have that in your mind if you're ever finding the Fourier series for an even or odd function. It means many of the integrals are going to be zero by virtue of symmetry, and you'd be crazy to work out big, hairy calculations to figure out you're going to get zero because of symmetry.
So the consequence of this, well, I guess I need a couple easy facts. Here's some facts. Let's see, an even times an even function is an even function. That's easy to check. An even times an odd function is an odd function. And the last one is an odd times an odd is an even function. Let's see, I'll just check one of those. Here's why. Let's have an even function. That means that f of minus x equals f of x. And multiply that by an odd function. Let's say that would mean that g of minus x is minus g of x. And if I have here h of x is f of x times g of x, then when I multiply them together over here, I would have h of minus x is minus h of x when I multiply those together. And sure enough, that means that an even times an odd is odd. In the other cases, you do the same. But this has a consequence for Fourier series. So the consequence cosine nx is even, and sine nx is odd. So is the function 1. Those are all the even functions. And sine nx is odd. And so if you're going to calculate the Fourier coefficients, for example, of, let's take a bn. Bn would be an integral from minus pi to pi of f of x sine nx dx. Okay, so let's say this thing is odd. Let's say f of x is odd. Then an odd times an odd function is even. I'm not getting zero, am I? Okay, I didn't want to. What do I want to get? Let's say f is even. Sorry. Then an even times an odd is an odd. And the integral of an odd function over a symmetric interval is going to be a big fat zero. Okay. So I've just shown you that the sine coefficients in a Fourier series are all zero for even functions. That's kind of cool. That means that only the even functions occur in the Fourier series for an even function. And only the odd functions occur in a Fourier series for an odd function. So here's the little fact that falls right out from that. odd function has no cosine terms. Has no cosine or constant term. In its Fourier series. And an even function has no sine functions. An even function has no sine terms.
So that's a fact.
By the way, it's a classic fact that any function can be expressed as a sum of an even and an odd function. So it's not a deep fact. I'd call it a fun fact.
So you notice in a Fourier series, I can pull all the cosine terms here and all the sine terms here. Then I would have a function expanded as an even function plus an odd function.
And it turns out that's not a big deal. You can always do that. Any function can be represented as a sum of even and odd functions. Any function can be expressed as odd plus even function. And let me show you how you do it. Has everybody seen this before? Kind of a little, it's not a big deal. All right, how do you do it? I would write f of x plus f of minus x over 2 plus f of x minus f of minus x over 2.
This one is even. This one is odd.
So it's, talk about not a big deal.
Yeah. But we're doing it by Fourier series. It turns out that this cosine term, the cosine business would be this part, and the sine business would add up to this part.
And I can actually express that in terms of things I was talking about last time. Let me talk about an example. My harpsichord problem. So remember, I had my harpsichord. I had this string, pluck shape.
And I got a Fourier sine series for that thing. And I realized, aha, all the sine functions are odd.
That means my Fourier sine series had to convert. This is called the odd extension. That doesn't look very clean. Clean it up a little bit. Okay, so this over here is the odd extension of the blue thing. That's the odd extension of the Fourier pluck, the harpsichord pluck, and then I could extend it periodically. So the periodic, I would extend it periodically and get these. That's called the odd periodic extension.
And here's when you think, when you've been thinking about even and odd functions for as long as we have, this is when you realize, aha, that Fourier sine series is the full Fourier series for the odd periodic extension of the pluck.
So I'll call that aha. The full Fourier series for the odd periodic extension of the harpsichord pluck. Is what I was calling the Fourier sine series. For the function. The Fourier sine series converged on 0 to pi. So I should be mentioning intervals here. This is 0 to pi. The full Fourier series for f is the Fourier sine series for the function on 0 pi, when I restrict it. That's why I was able to use only sine terms, and I didn't need the cosine terms. Bernoulli discovered that you just only need the sine terms by his method there. And similarly, there's something called the even periodic extension. And that would only give you, let's think about the even periodic extension. Let's see, I'd have my harpsichord pluck shape. It could look like this, 0 to pi. The even extension of the harpsichord pluck, I would reflect about the y-axis, and it would just be two tenths like that. And then the full Fourier series for this wouldn't have any cosine terms. That's the even periodic extension. And now, to get the all over the place, I would just repeat this. Like that. And then this thing would have a expansion in terms of cosine terms. So it would be equal to a naught, and there'd be, because it's even, there would be no sine terms. This would converge on the whole minus pi to pi and everywhere else because they're all 2 pi periodic. So here's a freaky fact. When I did the harpsichord problem, I expanded this in terms of sine functions. I can also expand it in terms of cosine functions. I didn't need cosine functions, I needed sine functions. But there's something called the Fourier cosine series, and it converges to this thing on that bump. This thing is called the Fourier cosine series. When I restrict it to minus pi, 0 to pi.
Yeah. Let's see.
Maybe I'll get us ready for what's going to happen next lecture.
A lot of the stuff I'm going to do in the next lecture works for any kind of Fourier series you've got. Cosine series, sine series, or full one. And the key, so next time I'm going to prove this famous thing called Bessel's inequality
that has huge consequences. Bessel's inequality, it says that the sum of those Fourier coefficients, sum of them squared, is finite. But I don't want to write sines and cosines right now. Let's write f, I want to expand f as a sum of orthogonal functions. So Bessel's inequality is about expanding things in orthogonal functions where the inner product of phi n with phi m. That would be the integral from minus pi to pi of phi n times phi m dx. That's equal to zero if n is unequal to m. And I'm going to make them normalized. It's going to be equal to 1 if n equals m. I'll divide them by a constant, so that's true.
So that's like the sine and cosine business. They're orthogonal functions. That's what you're doing in your homework, right? Which is due Monday, by the way. So those are orthogonal. And Bessel's inequality says, if that's the case, and those are orthogonal functions, then
the sum of the cn's squared as n goes from 1 to infinity is less than or equal to the integral of f squared dx from minus pi to pi.
It's going to turn out to be a remarkably easy thing to show. So if this f is a square integral thing, which all our functions have been, it means that this sum, this thing is a finite sum. And in particular, remember from freshman calculus, if a series converges, the terms have to go to zero. So it's going to follow from Bessel's inequality.
Consequently, the Fourier coefficients tend to zero as n goes to infinity.
That's freaky because you're thinking, oh, the sine things are wiggling like hell, and they don't look like they're going to go to zero. But there's something about the wiggling that makes those integrals go to zero. So the sine is, you know, it's above the axis as much as it is below, and as it wiggles like hell, those things cancel. And in the limit, you have a function times sine, which is wiggling like hell. The wiggling cancels out and makes the integral go to zero. That's how you should think about it. You can think about it that way, but to demonstrate it, you need Bessel's inequality. And Bessel's inequality is just going to be a snack. It's just a matter of writing out an integral and summing it up.
And I don't want to do it in the last 2 minutes of class. By the way,
this is Bessel's inequality. If you have a good orthogonal system, that becomes an equality.
So there's something called Parseval's identity, and that's Bessel's inequality with an equality. So it's Bessel's with, instead of less than or equal to, you get an equal sign there.
And what that means is you've got a particularly good orthogonal system. It means all the functions can be expanded in terms of that orthogonal system. If you don't have enough, you get a strict inequality, or you won't get an equality. The Parseval's formula says for very good ones that are what are called complete, you get equality.
And that holds for Fourier series. Because that thing is a complete system. And we'll talk more about that as we go along. Okay, that's what we'll do next time.
It is rather.
Is there a reason for that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, they are related. Since the cosine terms are even, then the
right,
sine
yeah.
Terms are odd. Yeah. You might be able to think of some deep thing going on there, but that's more of a coincidence, I think.
Okay. And I also have a question about complex.